ओम ज्ञानत्विरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
श्रीमद्भागवतम् कैंटो 1 चैप्टर 8 टेक्स्ट 9. डेथ इज द टॉपिक हियर. हाउ टू बी प्रोटेक्टेड फ्रॉम डेथ. As long as we are in the material world, there must be death. Even if we live a very long life, there must be death. This creates fear, because we do not like to die, and we are afraid of what will happen after death. So the only solution is to go to the world where there is no death. But there is a qualification to go there. The qualification to go to the world of deathlessness is to become free from the enviousness that causes us to enter the world of death. We are very much attached to our positions in this material existence. We find in Mahabharata there's an incident where a person is astonished to see a worm trying to get out of the path of a cart so that it doesn't get killed. Cart? Ratam. This living being is in the body of a worm. Why should he be bothered if the worm body dies? But we are all very attached to our position. In the Puranas, it is told an incident of Indradev, who, having offended his guru, was cursed to fall down to become a pig. So instead of being the great respected Indra in heaven, he was just a pig on this earth. That's a big difference, isn't it? But after some time, it was found that in the heavenly planets, they needed Indra back. Because even in the heavenly planets, some leader is needed. So when the demigods invited Indra, who had now taken the form of a pig, to come back, he refused. He said, "I'm very happy here. I have my Mrs. Pig and piglets, and I'm very healthy, you can see. Every morning I get fresh, hot breakfast." I don't think that Indra could be more happy than me. This is called Maya. Actually, even the position of Indra, that's also Maya. The Indra of today is the Indra Gop of tomorrow. Indra Gop means a tiny bug. So those who are intelligent, they consider that we are not meant to live in this world. We are meant to be free from the fear of death. But even if we say this to people, very few people can take it seriously. Mostly people, they can't really consider this, because they consider that what I'm doing in this world is most important. And when we die, we'll see about that. In English, there's a saying, "We'll cross that bridge when we come to it." In other words, there's no need to think about something until we're in that position, which is an applicable paradigm in some situations, but not in all situations. Just like if you're going to go on a journey from Tamil Nadu to Assam in the winter, you should bring some warm clothing, because generally it's warm, fairly warm. Not very cold in Tamil Nadu in the winter, but in Assam it's very cold. So planning in advance is required also. Now, it's sure that we all have to die, and therefore an intelligent person should make some preparation for that. Generally, they advise you make a preparation by making a will. But that's all right, but what's going to happen to you? Is there life after death? People say, "Well, we'll see." But it's more intelligent to consider before we die what will happen, rather than seeing what happens at the time. According to all the great spiritual teachers in the history of the world, what we do in this life affects us after death, because life continues after the death of the body. So even if we say that we don't know what will happen after death, we should consider that if all the spiritual teachers are correct and we don't act properly in this life, then we're in for a lot of trouble after it. People say, well, there's no proof that life continues after death. By proof, they mean empiric proof. Well, actually, there is plenty of evidence of life continuing after the death of the body. Inasmuch as all over the world, there are plenty of ghosts. And that in all cultures, in all times, they have reported such beings suggests that such beings do exist. And in Krishna consciousness, we're not much concerned with ghosts. But it is some kind, that there are so many instances reported of ghosts suggests that they exist. In fact, before I came to Krishna, before I knew anything about Krishna consciousness in this lifetime, I was considering that there's so much, that was one reason why I considered that life continues after death, because there are so many instances all over the world of there being ghosts. Ghost life is not a high form, but as I say, it does clearly indicate that life continues after death. So what happens after death? Who can tell us? Well, there are experts. There are also inexperts who attempt to tell us. The greatest body or the greatest tradition for understanding life after death is the Vedic tradition. Some years ago, I was with Bhakti Charu Swami, who was one of the leading disciples of Srila Prabhupada, and he told me that he had been invited to attend a conference in Switzerland on the subject of life after death and reincarnation. And he said there were all kinds of different people there. There were Buddhists and different philosophers and religionists, but none of them knew what they were talking about. None of them had a clear idea of what happens after death. Buddhists also talk of reincarnation, although they don't accept the existence of the Atma. So it's very difficult for them to explain who or what is taking another body. In fact, they don't believe in anything. They believe in nothing. They have dozens and dozens of books and so much elaborate philosophy to explain how everything is nothing. And they have different schools of philosophy of Buddhism which argue with each other over the nature of nothingness. Nothingness is like this. No, it's like that. So Bhakti Charu Swami told me that he was the only one there who could give a clear conception of what's going on. And everyone present recognized that. A scientific description of what happens to the soul after death. Do any of you know any shlokas from Bhagavad Gita or elsewhere that describes what happens after death? Yeah, na jayate mriyate vaha kadachin. That states that there is no birth or death for the soul. Yang yang vaapi smaran bhavam. Say it in full. Tyajyante kalevaram. Tang tame vaiti kaunteya sadatad bhava bhavitaha. Give the translation. Any more? That's the next verse. That this specifically describes what happens for those who are thinking of Krishna. Yeah. There are quite a few verses which describe what the result of thinking of Krishna, that we go to Krishna. Any others? Yeah, but this is not that concerned with those who are thinking of Krishna. That's not specifically. Vasaṃsi jīrnāni yathā vihāya. Say it. Nabhāni grihnanti naroparāni tathā anijāni saṅhyāti anyāni saṅhyāti nabhāni dehi. Okay, give the translation of that. What I'm looking for is some verses that connect, that connect our actions in this life with our destination in the next. the two important verses in Gita that I can think of in this connection. Who goes up? Here's a clue. Who goes up? Urdhvam gacchanti sattvastha. Madhye tishtanti rajasaha. Jaganya guna vritisto. Adho gacchanti tamasaha. Get the translation? Then another. Yanti deva vrita devan. All right, say that. So what we do in this life very much shapes our destination in the next. This important point should be understood. In the modern age, people don't have any idea of what is right and what is wrong. Or more specifically, what is punya and what is pap. They're promoting what you want to do, you do, as you like. This is the dog's philosophy. Dogs, they have a philosophy? Well, it's, we say the word tattvam, we think of something, it should be something dignified and intelligent. Cats and dogs. Human life is meant for very deeply thinking and considering. Yeah, when we say dog's philosophy, it's sarcasm actually, because dog doesn't have philosophy. Dog is not capable of framing a philosophy, because all he knows is, I have my senses, I want to enjoy them. So a human being, if he's like that, then just like a dog. They may try to give some philosophy to justify it, but actually it's just animalism. Prabhupada asked some of his disciples to write a book called Intellectual Animalism. That in the name of being intelligent, people are simply living like cats and dogs. So persons who are actually intelligent, they should be philosophical in the true sense of the term. That they consider what is the purpose of life. And if we consider that life in this material world is terminated by death, we can come to two basic conclusions. Either that death is the end of everything, therefore there's no need to search for any higher truth. Just live this life as it is. Or that, as all the great spiritual teachers profess, there is life after death. And we should utilize this life to act in such a way that we do not have to get born again, which means we do not have to die again. This is intelligence. How to do that? We should take shelter of Krishna. Krishna never dies. Krishna is never born. Krishna never suffers the threefold miseries of material. Krishna is always blissful. Krishna is calling us to come with him, to live blissfully with him, instead of suffering repeated birth and death. So let us all come to Krishna. Try to understand this philosophy of Gita and Bhagavatam and act accordingly. Act accordingly means we should, if we're actually hearing about, chanting about and thinking of Krishna, then we'll certainly want to chant his names and engage in his service. So we're holding these classes every morning, just so that our faith in and conviction in the process of Krishna consciousness can increase day by day by day. It may be that some of our devotees, they haven't really internally made their full commitment to Krishna. We're still thinking how I can enjoy this material world. But the attitude of enjoyment of this material world acts against our own real self-interest. Our real self-interest is to stop thinking about what I think would be good for me and simply think how I can best serve Krishna with the full faith that whatever happens, Krishna will protect. And one who has this faith is always protected by Krishna, as we find in the case here of Uttara. She, in distress, she called out for the protection of Krishna. And Krishna protected her and the embryo within her womb. Now I may say, well, why did Uttara pray for the protection of her body? If we know that we're not the body, then we shouldn't care even if anyone kills us. But to be Krishna conscious doesn't necessarily mean to be totally cut off from this world. We have to serve Krishna with this body also. We find in this case, Uttara was asking for the protection of the child within her womb, who, as was later proved, was to become a great devotee of Lord Krishna. So all these points have to be very finely understood. That we are fully dependent upon Krishna. But at the same time, it may appear that we make our own arrangements. We don't expect that Krishna, for instance, will come and fan us in the hot season. That we should consider, if I'm suffering from the heat, well, that's just anyway some karmic reaction, something like that. No. If one is suffering from severe cold in winter, he may wear some warm clothes, but he should also think that I'm put in this situation somehow or other by the mercy of Maya, who is the superintendent of Krishna's external energy. This way, a devotee always remains happy. Sukhe dukhe samahriva. In all respects, you remain satisfied. It is very good advice, actually. Otherwise, our tendency is always to remain dissatisfied. Now, a devotee for his own sake is always satisfied. But because he has much work to do in the service of Krishna, then it may feel that he is dissatisfied. He wants to do everything nicely for Krishna. That's why he may become upset sometimes with other devotees. Why didn't you do this service properly? But that is not an expression of his egoism, but rather of his desire to see that the Lord is served most properly. That is not an expression of envy on the part of the devotee. This Uttara was praying very intensely to Krishna. And Krishna fulfilled her desire. There's a good lesson here. We should pray intensely to Krishna. We have heard that Draupadi, when she was being disrobed by Dushasana, that she was holding on to the cloth with one hand and calling out for Krishna with the other. But when she realized that she couldn't protect herself with one hand or with even two hands, then she gave up all attempts and simply stretched her arms out, both hands, calling out for Govinda, Govinda, Govinda. And then, only then, did Krishna manifest as unlimited cloth. So we can learn from this verse in purport that life certainly continues after death. And we should learn from this that to utilize our human form of life to cultivate Krishna consciousness in such a way that we don't have to die again. Actually, love of Krishna is beyond the desire to be born or not be born. But that is the, we could say, the first stage of devotional service. There's some tinge of selfishness there also. How will I get free from birth and death? But as one becomes more advanced, then he becomes less interested in the personal benefit of getting liberated. And the devotee becomes more and more personally involved in thinking how to satisfy Krishna in all respects. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment?
The scriptures generally advise us to chant the holy name of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Sri Vaishnavas, they are chanting this Vishnu Sahasranam.
Mm-hmm.
Is it necessary that we should advise them to chant the Hare Krishna mantra? In what way it should be?
Well, according to Shastra, if you chant the whole Vishnu Sahasra, if you chant 1,000 times names of Vishnu 3 times, then that's equal to chanting Krishna once. So chanting the Vishnu Sahasra undoubtedly is very good. But how much better is the chanting of Hare Krishna? That you can please consider. Anything else? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.